My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you're a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear, and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break, and stay retro. Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I'm Darren Hupke. I'm literally looking at this notes file I have to read that out loud as if I'm going to screw up the name of my own podcast. But I am Darren Hupke. I'm here with returning guest now, Matt Storm, a.k.a. Stormageddon. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Happy to be back. It's been so long, but I'm glad to be back on the show.
See, some people play into it. Some people don't. Some people are just like, yeah, cool. And we're recording this immediately following the last episode. Like, but you're going to be hearing this weeks later, listener. But yes, thank you for playing along. Well, you told us a little bit about yourself on the last episode. So if you've not heard that, go back and listen to that one first. It's probably better anyway for you to do so, because it was Matt's first episode. But for now, what is... let's see. What kind of question? This will come out in a few weeks. Is there a game, a 2026 game, that you are looking forward to already on your calendar, on your radar? Or what is an anticipated game you have coming up that you're looking forward to playing?
I mean, a game that I'm really anticipating that may still come out this year, we don't know the new release date yet, is Mina the Hollower. I am a big Yacht Club fan, big Shovel Knight fan. You can make a drinking game out of fun and games, just how many times we mention Shovel Knight, and Jeff and I love it. And I was really looking forward to Mina the Hollower, needing more time. Always love when a game is delayed in the sense that it means they get the time they need to do whatever they need to do to make it the best they can. And so likely my guess is that'll come out early next year. That is easily one of my most anticipated games. They're doing a top-down kind of Game Boy style Zelda game, but mixed with Castlevania and Bloodborne, and like it just looks dope, and everything Yacht Club touches turns to gold. So I'm really excited for that one.
Yeah, that's cool. Fun. All right. Well, let's get into it then. Less time for intros here because you gave us the intro already. So that was our little warm up news up front portion of the show. But I've got more this or that's for you if you want to jump in and do those. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Graphics or frame rate?
Oh, frame rate. Always a performance junkie. I don't care about the graphics. I want it to just be smooth as butter.
Okay. Run and gun or beat 'em up?
Beat 'em up. All day long. Streets of Rage. Let's go. Ninja Turtles. I'm all in.
Okay. Castlevania or Metroid?
Big fan of both. Big Metroidvania nerd. But it's got to be Metroid. I love the Metroid series. Also,
got to be Metroid.
Less game.
Wow.
Less games, so the hit rate's better, because Castlevania's had way more games and way more bad games. So
yes,
there's that,
yes,
too.
There are more other M-quality Castlevanias than there are Metroids, so that is true. Yeah. Sonic or Mario? That's a dumb one.
It's Sonic, honestly. Like, as much as I love Mario, there's something about the 2D Sonic games and even the 3D Sonic games. I unabashedly love Sonic Adventure 1 and 2. I don't care what other people think. But it's got to be Sonic for me. I had a Genesis before I had a Super Nintendo. And as much as I love Mario, there's something special to me about Sonic.
Interesting. I mean, I honestly did not expect that answer at all. I mean, I put it on here, you know, hoping people would pick either or, and no one's ever picked Sonic before. So there we go. I guess it stays. The question stays because there can be variety here. Do you want a custom character or a scripted hero?
Custom character. I like to put myself in video games. It's my favorite thing to do. Make it look like me. Make choices like me. I like putting myself in those fantasy worlds.
You had that as one of the questions you want to answer, actually, and we didn't select that. And I want to ask more about that, but we'll have to save that for a future episode where you record the answer to that, because okay. I want to ask more, and I'm just going to fight the urge. Okay. Trash can turkey or enemy heart?
Trash can turkey or enemy heart? I mean, probably trash can turkey. You know, I mentioned Streets of Rage before. I'd be betraying myself if I didn't pick that.
Yeah, things found while whipping candelabras or trash cans. let's see. Amnesia or Hero Out of Time?
Both tropes. I think Hero Out of Time. I don't really love an amnesia story. And they seem to be pretty frequent in TV and movies and video games. I think I prefer the Hero Out of Time.
Yeah, there's some good Grey's Anatomy storylines with Amnesia, but otherwise, yeah. Monster Rancher or Monster Hunter?
Oh, Monster Hunter, hands down. Wilds was one of my games of this year until so many other games came out this year, but loved Wilds, big Monster Hunter fan.
Okay, then we'll do last one here. We'll go to a different generation. Xbox 360 or PS3?
Oh, Xbox 360. I never owned a PS3. The 360, Xbox One, and lost me in the 360 generation. Never had an Xbox, never had an Xbox One. The 360, though, I was all in, because that was the Mass Effect console, for a while at least, and so that got me to buy one. And then I was all in on that ecosystem for just that generation.
Yeah, I think I started Mass Effect 360. Obviously, you had to. And 1 and 2, both were done that way. But then when that collection came out for PS3, around the time that 3 came out, right? Was that like the same time 3 came out that they released it for PS3 that way? I don't remember. Maybe I played 3 on 360 as well, and then I just decided to replay it all again on the PS3. Because I did do that. But I remember playing through it. And not only did I recreate as many of the same choices I made already and didn't take it as a chance to do something different, but like it, like, I just played the same game again, and I had no complaints about it because I just loved that series. Like Mass Effect 2, you mentioned in the earlier episode too. That is one of my favorite games of all time. Like, and it's weird to think like the game that's right in the middle of it all. Like, how is that the most exciting, entertaining one? But just the character, like stories, and like all of the connections you make along the way, and like leading up to like the big last fight of it all. Like, I just loved that. Like, and then getting everyone to like, you know, their loyalty mission and everything, like learning about everybody. Like, this Mass Effect 2 is just fantastic game, top to bottom.
Yeah, I agree. I will say, and we said this in our first three seasons and in our third season specifically, Mass Effect 3 got a bad rap. The endings, again, are a little disappointing, but I think that whole game is the ending. And if you complain that Mass Effect 3 is bad because you hate the last 5 minutes, then you don't really like Mass Effect, because the whole third game is coming, like, just paying out on all the cool little choices you made. So justice for Mass Effect 3.
Yeah. I don't know that I've met like a lot of people like really angry or down on Mass Effect 3. I've met, you know, plenty of people and even friends who like were down on it like a little bit, but I felt the same way. Like, you know, you still see Morden's story end. You still see like Rex and Grunt, and like, you know, like all the storylines play out. And you just get a moment where you get to like, you know, you see the end act is like primarily just kind of Shepard's ending, sure. But like, you see everybody, like everything gets wrapped up as best as it can be and everything. And like the whole game that's the cap to it, all that stuff. So I enjoyed it. Yeah. The ending itself, like this final choice, was a little like binary and kind of, you know, strange, but like it wasn't the only part that ended it all. Like, you know, there's plenty of endings leading up to that. So I'm good with it. I enjoyed it. I've not replayed that in a while though.
If you want to replay it, I'm just saying there's a great podcast I can recommend that can go right along with your journey. I'm just saying.
I think I should just listen to the podcast and like that's be true. My playthrough. Just hear you play. Because for one, I don't doubt that I won't not be just the good hero who saves the Rachni Queen, who tries to just be the Peacebringer and everything. Like, I'd at least like to maybe hear somebody make some other choices than what I often will always just repeat the same ones over and over with. So I think what I'll do, the fighting games, the Mass Effect. Oh no. What's the Reignite. Name of the, okay, Reignite. That's the podcast I will be subscribing to right after this. And I got a whole trip to Portland here in a moment. I know this is going to be weeks later, but maybe I can listen to some of those episodes to help fill the flight time. So that'll be good. All right. Well, that's the this or that's. Let's jump into the icebreaker. And this might, if you have Mass Effect on the brain, this might influence you, but let's see. What is your favorite vehicle or mode of transportation in a video game?
I'll tell you what it isn't. It's not the Mako.
The Mako. That thing
stinks. although I did miss it once I had whatever the car was in Andromeda, because that one was worse for sure. Whatever that one was called. Favorite vehicle in a video game? That's a really good question.
Or mode of transportation.
Or mode of transportation.
Leaving it open for you to be silly or weird or outside the box if you'd like.
Mode of transportation. I mean, there's some really cool ones. I know the answer. The Epoch, or the Epic, depending on how you pronounce it, from Chrono Trigger. It's a time machine that starts out as just a stationary pod that you get in and it moves, and then eventually gets wings and can fly, and you fly around the world once to like hit that max speed, and then you time travel. It's just very cool. It's a spaceship / time travel machine, and probably my favorite mode of transportation.
Yeah, I don't know how it's properly pronounced either.
Didn't have voice acting, so you just had to assume, and you just said what you said.
Yeah, the like Legend of Zelda, like on Nintendo 64, I remember like Epona is what we would say, and then we met people and it was like Epona, and I was like, wait, is it Epona or is it Epona? Like, hold on, like where are we on here? And I just realized I'm not good at not good at reading things and then hearing them back from people. But now we have voice acting, so we don't have to ever be embarrassed about getting it wrong again. Okay. Well, again, the questions I had sent you over, we picked another one from the list. And so this one should also be fun, just to kind of hear a little bit about your personality and learn a little bit about the things that you find joy in. But the question we have for this episode is, do you have a favorite genre? And then to questions to answer along the way and everything, you know, what was the first game that exposed you to it? And what are some, maybe some key games or standout games that you love and some of your favorites of it? But yes, Matt, do you have a favorite genre?
So, I mean, I have like
maybe
several.
Maybe your number one. Yeah.
Right.
This, it's maybe hard, one it's of hard. Your favorite.
Yeah. It's so hard. Like if I had to pick a number one favorite genre of all time, I mean, it's so tough. Like I'm torn between two genres, but I think if I had to pick one for this episode and assuming that I'll come back and maybe we'll do a second part or a third part, let's go with, because we've teased it a little bit between the last episode and this one, I think Metroidvanias, which admittedly is still the dumbest genre name ever. The search action genre is probably my favorite genre of all time. I've played so many games in that genre, and it is very rare that I dislike a game. It may not always mix. Like, I may not always finish every game. And ironically, I'm not someone who 100% completes any of these games. I may have completed the older Metroids at some point, but now, if I'm playing a Metroidvania, it's to find what I could find and then move on. If I'm really digging the game, I'll go back. Or if it's a game I memorized because I played it a million times. So yeah, Metroidvanias, we'll say today is my favorite genre ever.
Okay.
Ever. Who knows tomorrow?
I love a good Metroidvania. Symphony of the Night is one of my favorite games of all time. I have a bad Alucard tattoo. To me, it was a game as a, you know, as a younger player, it was one that I was like, this is like the best value in games, because it wasn't like, yes, you're just playing like a few levels, like, hey, here's eight levels that then once you get to the end of this challenge, you're done and you replay the same levels. It was like, no, here's a giant place to explore, figure out how you can get to the nooks and crannies, figure out how you can kind of solve, like, you know, to get beyond all of this. But it was like, wow, I'm actually putting 10, 20, 30 hours into this thing instead of replaying the same handful of stages over and over again until I'm bored. And then growing up, obviously the things that, you know, people have done to innovate the genre and everything and add to it and expand upon it and fuse it with other genres. It's just been great. But what was the first one? I mean, I guess the original Metroid, would that be the first one that kind of exposed you to the genre yourself?
So I would say that the first Metroid was the first Metroidvania I played, not knowing it was a Metroidvania, just knowing it was a very scary, creepy game that I didn't understand, because that first game is spooky. The music, mm-hmm, the darkness, the dialogue. Oof. Oh yeah, right? Like, ugh, the brain star, the, like, the hero theme is engaging, but a lot of the other music, especially in the certain biomes, were just super creepy or sparse. But I would say the first Metroidvania I played, really knowing it was a Metroidvania and engaging with it that way, was probably Super Metroid. I loved Super Metroid. It is not my favorite Metroid game, but it's still one that I have a lot of love for. And it's probably the first Metroidvania that I played going, this is a genre I like. This is a kind of game I like. And really like leaning into like, and that game I definitely 100%ed at some point. I haven't in a long time, but probably back in the day when you had like eight games, you had to play them over and over again. I for sure probably explored every nook and cranny in that game.
Oh, fun. Yeah. We kind of mentioned the 360 already, but the 360 era, like for one, Castlevania Symphony Night was re-released on Xbox Live Arcade for whatever odd reason that happened. I have no idea why. And that was the first game that raised the storage limit for downloadable arcade games. It used to be capped at like 50 megabytes or 100 megabytes or something. But when that game was released, they raised the cap to allow games to be up to 250 megabytes or larger. Eventually, they just got rid of that entirely. But that being released on 360, I thought was really rad. But then not long later, Shadow Complex came out, mm-hmm, and then you started to have like obviously like the big indie gaming boom, and Metroidvanias are a very, you know, popular genre for a lot of studios to try and like dip their toes into and try and make one and everything. What are some Metroidvania titles in like recent years that, you know, you put into, you know, high esteem and acclaim for games that you've loved over in the genre that way?
Sure. So just a comment on the 360 thing. I had a PlayStation, but for some reason never played Symphony of the Night on my PlayStation. I didn't play it to completion until I got it on the 360. And like, I was an achievement hunter back then, played the Upside Down Castle, the whole nine yards. And I loved Shadow Complex. I don't think I ever finished it, but I loved that game. I thought it was a really fun, unique take. And it was like a modern 2D Metroidvania, which we've gotten plenty of now. I mean, before I move on to indie stuff, I have to shout out Metroid Dread. I think it's an incredible sequel to my favorite Metroidvania of all time, Metroid Fusion. I never thought I'd get a direct sequel to that game. I lost my mind when I saw that trailer for Metroid 5 that showed up on the screen, and then we got Dread, and I really love that game. But as far as indie stuff, I actually played one at the beginning of this year, end of last year, that was phenomenal, called Crypt Custodian, that was a top-down Zelda-style Metroidvania. And the story of it is you're this cat that has recently gone to the afterlife, and you show up in the afterlife and meet the supposed greeter of the afterlife, who banishes you outside of the heavenly mansion where all of the good spirits go. And then you have to explore this world to make friends and try and break into this space. And it's a really kind of silly, goofy game with a lot of heart. You meet a lot of animal companions. You are equipped with only a broom, and the way the Metroidvania stuff happens is with different abilities that you get, but you never get a new weapon, but you get other things like a dash, a double jump. You can make invisible paths appear, so on and so forth. Got an incredible soundtrack, really cool art design. And so that one comes to mind right off the top. I'm not a Hollow Knight fan. I think it's a perfectly fine, like probably very good game. That's not for me. I don't like how hard it is. We talked, I think it was in the previous episode, but now it all bleeds together, that I'm not a huge Souls person. And so that level of difficulty, I say ironically realizing that Metroid Dread was not an easy game and I beat that to completion, but it depends on the game for me. I'm trying to think of other indie Metroidvanias that come to mind. I've played so many of them. Oh, I played a game also, I think this was this year, called Blade Chimera, which is basically Symphony of the Night with guns. The animation and art style is basically very similar to like the kind of pixel art that Symphony of the Night used. And it's this kind of sci-fi cyberpunk future. And you play this ultimate warrior character who is like defending the land from demons. You meet a spirit that becomes a blade that fights for you and helps you. And a story unveils itself. And it was probably one of my favorite modern Metroidvanias that I've played in a while. It's not doing anything brand new. It's definitely very much, like I said, Symphony of the Night with guns. Like, it's doing a similar kind of thing. But I thought the story was good, and it was entertaining, and it was a lot of fun to play.
That's cool. Those are some good ones to check out then. I actually, I haven't played any of those that you listed. So that's fun. I'll add them to a list. Guacamelee 1 and 2, if you have never played those, I love those games.
I know of them, though. I've heard they're very good, yeah.
Yeah, the length on them, I think, is also what really helps, is they don't overstay their welcome at all. Like, you can probably finish them much sooner than most of those other, you know, games in the genre. And then another series I haven't played yet, but I've only heard great things about, is like the Ori series, yes. Ori in the Blind Forest, the Will-O-Wisps. Those have always gotten like high praise, but also just from being a Castlevania fan, the spiritual, you know, successor of the Igavena series, the Bloodstained. I like Bloodstained a lot, both in the like NES inspired, like, you know, prequel throwback style, like difficulty ones. They're less Metroidvania and more, you know, just the classic Castlevania formula, but the actual prime Bloodstained title, I enjoyed quite a bit. Like, I played it top to bottom and absolutely loved that. But yeah, it's a solid genre for sure. It's I was just reading on Blue Sky that Jeremy Parrish is working on that that Metroidvania book. You know, finally a genre he loves, and that'll be coming out from Dark Horse, like in collaboration of Press Run and Dark Horse. So that'll be cool to have like a big video game book on a big publisher stage and everything too. So I'm excited about that. What do you think about the genre appeals to you most? Like, what is the thing that scratches the itch that, you know, gives you joy? Like, or is it like the mechanics of it, the wonder of exploring things, being able to, you know, fuse genres or whatever it may be? Like, what about it to you do you enjoy that puts it so high for you?
I think what I really love about this genre is that there are so many different ways to do it. I mean, I think at its core, my other favorite genre is 2D platformers, and there's a lot of that DNA in a Metroidvania. But also, like, if I don't mention the words Animal Well, the people will riot. A game I also love that came out last year.
Love Animal Well.
And, like, Animal Well, like, the reason I love the genre is because Animal Well is a Metroidvania with no combat. Or very minimal, right? You can throw firecrackers. But, like, there's no combat. There are boss battles, also with no combat. And so, like, I think you can do stuff like that in other genres, but I think there's something particularly special about the Metroidvania to do stuff like that, like having a puzzle game that's a Metroidvania. I think of games also like Time Spinner or Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, which, like, also have unique spins on it. Shantae, you know, you were a genie in previous games, and this, you don't have your powers. So instead, you're using Risky Boots, magical pirate items to do those, you know, kind of Metroidvania traversal stuff. Or even like Bloodstained, you know, which is taking of something that was featured in the Game Boy Advance and DS Metroid game or Castlevania games and kind of repurposing it and making you unique with this new character where you're getting souls to get different abilities. I played that game on the Switch and never finished it because unfortunately it ran like a pile of poop. So I eventually had to go back and play it on a different platform to actually see it to its end. But like, I think its versatility is why I like it, to list all these other games that I couldn't list before. I think its versatility is what really makes a Metroidvania really strong, is that you can have different kinds of combat. You can have melee combat. You can have ranged combat. You can have no combat. You know, you can have puzzles. You can have no puzzles. You can have exploration of different kinds, different ways to explore. I think that the fact that they can be hard, they can be easy, they can be puzzly. I think you can have that kind of versatility in other genres, but I think there's something particularly special about Metroidvanias that really allow you to, like, all you need is to get a thing to get to the next thing. And if you can do that, you can also do the other stuff like the combat, the platforming, and whatever else. The Messenger, which I forgot to mention earlier, also a great Metroidvania that uses 16-bit and 8-bit graphics in a unique way also, which is really cool. So, yeah, I think aesthetically they're also really interesting. Like, they can be 2D or 3D. I played Metroid Prime for the first time when the remaster came out. I missed it back in the day. And, like, it works very well in first person. I was a big doubter. It's why I never played it originally. But it works really well in 3D. And so, like, I think it even defies the perspective shifts, too. Though the majority of them happen to be 2D, I think that there's even a quite a few 3D ones that work really well too. And I think it's that versatility as a genre that keeps me coming back to it time and time again.
Yeah, that's I agree with all those things. I mean, that's like, it's also a high genre for me. So, like, I love just articulating that, you know, in that way. Like, it's just not my brain telling me those things. You're able to articulate it very well. Animal Well is one I should have also mentioned that as well. That's just one of the best experiences recently of just feeling almost that horror game tension in certain moments. You had to take the frisbee and like replace it with that disc, and you had to go through that whole like multiple screen, like, you know, traversal space like that. Like, when I realized, like, when I found that space, and then I went back and I found the other space, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, what if I brought this all the way over there, you know? And then as soon as I did it, and like the spirit of that wolf, you know, is like kind of following around and harassing you, like, I realized like it was some like, oh, this is actually what they intend for you to do here. And this is challenging. And being able to actually complete that was just like a super rewarding and super cool feeling. Like, I haven't had a lot of games that like really pushed me to like, you know, challenge me to like, you know, this isn't going to be simple, and, you know, you may not want to do this, but like, here you go. And just doing that was just like, yes, I did it. I still have that. There's a piece of inside of me who is open to challenge and like, you know, doing difficult things and overcoming adversity. So that was fun. Love that game. And I'm just realizing there's a mosquito in my room, and I've wanted to get this for nights, and I'm not going to be able to get it right now. Dang it. But Lost in Cult, they have their design work series of books. They have an Animal Well one coming out soon. And I had meant to purchase that a while ago. And when I popped in here, I saw it still in my cart. So I am currently clicking payment and purchased. There we go. So the Animal Well design
podcast purchase.
Live. You just heard a transaction happen. And I've just... bought the should be amazing Animal Well Design Works book from Lost and Colt. So if y'all haven't checked that out, if you're Animal Well fans, take a look at it. It's got really good art and design for the book itself, but they have a physical edition of the book or of the game you can also buy too. But yeah, well, those are Metroidvanias then. Thank you for bringing that genre to the show, because that's a, a personal favorite, and it's always a good time to try out big or small. I love it when a game is attempts to fuse that genre with something else and mix it up a little bit, you know, like Dead Cells, the roguelike Metroidvania and whatnot. It's always fun when things, you know, gamble and try something new. So that's the show then, Matt. Anything else you'd like to share? Last time you you talked about your podcast and, you know, some episodes kind of go out and highlight. Anything else, maybe, even if it's outside of gaming, anything you want to plug, share, say, promote, shout out, highlight?
I mean, unfortunately, I never shut up about video games, so I'm not sure what else to promote at this point. I guess I can promote a few Metroidvania-related things. Episode 144 of Fun and Games was about the game Romancevania, which makes dating sim visual novel with a Metroidvania, very influenced by Castlevania. It was a fantastic interview with the two of the members of the team that made the game, Bill and Amanda, from Deep End Games. It was a really great chat. For episode 150 of SideQuest, me and Jeff were joined by Alex Lavelle to talk about Metroid Dread, which was a great conversation. Tons of Metroid games are covered in SideQuest. And then we did a way back in episode 114, we did Misfortune with Metroids. Can't even say my own titles. Where we brought Alex Lavelle on to talk about the entire run of Metroid games and like that franchise and our first impressions on Dread, because it was right after Dread had come out. And so if you really love Metroid games specifically, you can go check that out. And then we've just talked about Metroidvanias back in episode 57 broadly, like why we love it, Metroidvanias, what we love about that genre. So tons of stuff over on Fun and Games covering the genre. So if you are a fan of it, tons of stuff to check out.
That's cool. Yeah, I actually was a Kickstarter backer of Romancevania back in 2020.
So was I.
Yeah, yep. Confirmed that, and I realized I didn't actually ever download it or play it.
You should do that. Yeah. It's a fun game.
I mean, the important part is my money was there, and it helped kind of help creation. Like, at least, like,
totally,
the people who needed it got it, and the good thing happened. So a cool thing I can just download in the background and ensure I go back to check that out. But fun. All right. Well, thank you so much again for doing the show. I'm glad we got to connect online. Again, check out and follow Matt's two podcasts. I'll have like links in the show notes as well. You are just a good person in the gaming community. Again, follow you on Blue Sky. He supports many great projects and Patreons and things like that. You know, we need more people like you out there helping, just spreading positivity, talking games, having fun, and helping others do the same. So thanks a bunch for doing the show. And I definitely will be sending you invites to do future episodes for sure. Hopefully you are down.
I am absolutely down. Thank you for having me, and thank you for your doing this incredible show and having me to be a part of it. This has been a blast.
Right on. Well, you have a good night then, Matt, and enjoy your weekend. Bye.
You too. Take care.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.